Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise, and this is the Dr. Denise Show. This is the Embrace Your Neurostyle series, and I'm so honored to have Ben Ahrens here today. Ben had his someone reach out to me, and the way Des wrote sort of the email, Ben, I'm like, oh my goodness, I have to meet you. So it's so nice to have you on the show here today.
Well, it's really great to be here. So yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Denise, for having me on.
Yeah, and I know that one thing that you and I did is we just spoke briefly on the phone because I really like to get like a fresh discussion here and take you and I through the journey of like what got you to this point. You have traveled the globe in honor of wellness, not illness, resiliency, neuroplasticity. You have executive positions. I'm going to have, you know, your bio there, but you're also very passionate about a new endeavor and that founder of it's Reorigin.
Reorigin, correct.
Yeah. So where do you want to start? What would be fun? I mean, do you want to, it's so fun when you're, so I feel like that's time to play and the window into your soul. I mean, you've been on quite your own healing journey, right?
Yeah. It's definitely, as you mentioned, you know, taken me through a lot of different disciplines and different parts of the globe. And, you know, it's sometimes interesting to look back, and sometimes it's only through retrospect that we're able to see what those common threads are. And I think for me, the common thread is neuroplasticity, or basically flexibility, you know, this incredible ability that we have as human beings to change. And of course, when it comes to the word neuroplasticity, we're talking about, you know, the brain that changes, and we can get into, you know, some of the things around that and why that's so important when it comes to healing. But I just think from a very young age, I always had this curiosity and fascination with our ability to create changes in our own lives, our physical health, our mental, emotional well-being, and ultimately our experience of life.
I love your words. I'm listening so carefully. And not only did I have the honor of being with you right now, I just spoke on with Kathleen O'Toole, co-producing another show on Staying Sane. And today's show that's going to launch is Life is the Meditation. And we had quoted some data about neuroplasticity that for a long time, the myth buster was that we didn't have the ability to sort of regenerate. You know, it wasn't until the 1960s that we knew about neurogenesis, neuroplasticity. So we're going to go there, you and I, today, but I just find it amazing. Everyone pay attention throughout your day when there's a series of there are no coincidences, right? Do you find that, Ben, like in like the moment of who you're talking to and when it's like kind of like the cool chess game of life?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. In fact, you know, it makes me think of travel and those times where you just something leads you to a certain place where you meet a certain person. And that in and of itself is kind of like what's going on in the brain when new neurons are finding each other and making connections. So I always like to look at things from this like both microcosmic and macrocosmic perspective. And ultimately, I think what you just described is this kind of state of flow that we all experience on many different levels.
Yeah, I love it. And you know, that's part of my process. I don't know what it's like for you and your email inbox, but I just want to, you know, you're just getting to know me and gratitude's my secret sauce. So I'm excited. Shout out to Des, your assistant, because however she wrote the email and then the energy vibration of me going, yeah, I really want to meet you. And so I just like to have even gratitude for that process. And I'd love for you to let everyone know why you're so passionate about neuroplasticity and maybe a window under your own unique story of healing.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, like many people early on in life, I got into things like exercise and was fascinated at how you could do certain specific things and that could change your body. And I noticed that, you know, there was this flexibility and adaptability in how our muscles could change and how we could learn new skills. And as a child, I'd say I was always very less interested in team sports and more interested in what I could learn to do. So I would learn to juggle and ride a unicycle and do all these, you know, interesting things because I was just so fascinated about how my brain and body, not even thinking about the brain at that time, but really how my body could, you know, acquire new abilities. And in my mid-20s, I came up against this at the time, you know, massive challenge, turned out to be the best learning experience. But long story short, I ended up getting a severe case of late stage neurological Lyme disease combined with other triggers. I had been traveling and doing things. So it's when someone ends up as sick as I did, I was bedbound for about 3 years. It's never one thing. It's usually a combination of a lot of different triggers that create this, you know, so-called perfect storm. And that was certainly the case for me. And I remembered for the first time in my life feeling really utterly stuck, you know, whereas previously I had learned ways to make changes and learn new things in this 3 to 4 or 5 year period. It was a real full on struggle. And every time I, you know, went to conventional doctors and tried different protocols, I was just met with more things that didn't work. And so I, you know, obviously this started to impact me on the emotional front, on pretty much every side of life. And, I really found myself sort of downward spiraling on all levels. The physical symptoms were so severe that, you know, I couldn't get out of bed on most days. I had very severe brain fog and juvenile rheumatoid arthritis and brain lesions and all these very scary things, you know, that were measurable. And a lot of doctors were even saying things like, you know, I might not be able to recover from this, and this might be, you know, my life for the next 50 years or so. And, it really wasn't until I came across, I think Norman Doidge's book was the first thing that just sparked that curiosity again, a book by the name of The Brain That Changes Itself, that I had this first bit of hope. And I realized I sort of like my brain, when I read the title of that book and then read the description, all of a sudden it kind of like jumped back. We're talking about, you know, connections and how things flow together. All of a sudden my brain and my memories went back to those other times in life where I remember encountering, you know, little areas of feeling stuck, but then learning something. Like when I was in, you know, seventh or eighth grade and I was a scrawny kid and I felt kind of stuck in that position, but then I learned about exercise and I learned that there was things that I could do and make changes. And so as soon as I started to put these pieces together and learn that the brain, once thought to be static, is actually incredibly malleable, now I started to become hopeful. Now I started to think, okay, maybe I'm not really stuck here. Maybe there's just things that I haven't learned yet, such that if I learn these things and learn to apply them, if there's some exercises or something I could do, that would result in my health changing again, my life changing again. And sure enough, didn't happen overnight, but step by step, you know, learning a lot of different things, trying a lot of different things borrowed from neurocognitive rehab and somatic experiencing and cognitive behavioral therapy and you name it, kind of putting a lot of different things together, slowly but surely I was able to influence some real changes in my brain, my nervous system, and ultimately the inflammation that was plaguing my body. And as a result, it just catalyzed that fascination with change and adaptability even further. And that set me off this mission to travel the world, to work with doctors from all different disciplines, to learn more, to start sharing what I'd learned, and ultimately to create a program called ReOrigin, which now teaches people science-based exercises that they can do to ultimately retrain their brain if they're struggling with any sort of condition like I was, or even things like long COVID, anything basically that has a self-perpetuating inflammatory nature, which in this day and age is so many different conditions. So I would just, you know, leave it off here by saying that if anyone is feeling stuck, I just want to really give you hope that our nature is actually to change. And by learning how to retrain your own brain, you can play a huge role into which direction that change proceeds.
So first of all, thank you for sharing your story. And I feel like that book, The Brain That Changes Itself, was a huge one of your aha moments, light bulb goes on. I think it's really important for all of us to look back at when we have those aha moments. And when you and I spoke briefly before we had the show, you talked about, you know, I feel like life for all of us is a series of crisis, stabilization, and thrive. And then when we have awareness, self-love, and altruism, we reach our optimal mental, physical, and spiritual well-being. And it sounds like you're the hope factor of the possibility to get well and staying in more of that neutral space. I find that one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the Embrace Your Neurostyle series is that the term neurostyle is defined as we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. And then the five pillars of biological, psychological, social, cultural, and spiritual, then you add the sixth sense. And so I find now, maybe with me saying that, can you do a deep dive on some of those pillars that are part of the science of changing your brain and neuroplasticity and some of the tips and tools you've learned throughout your journey of you embracing your unique neurostyle and pathways and brain and success?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I agree with you that I think the first step to making headway in any endeavor is really believing that you can.
Yes.
You know, so many of us, right, and like fail to even take that first step, or it's not really a failure, but just are met with such resistance because on some level we don't believe fully that we can. And this is something I think anyone can relate to. If anyone is familiar with the phenomenon of learned helplessness, you know, it's simply a conditioned response. If you've tried over and over again to regain your health, to diligently follow different protocols or try different ways, and each time it's been met with a suboptimal result, or worse yet, no results, as is often the case, then what's actually happening is a part of the brain is literally being conditioned, just like Pavlov's dog was conditioned to salivate at the ringing bell. A part of our brain can become conditioned to feel helpless and to think that, well, I've taken so many steps in the past that didn't move me forward. So, you know, why should this one be any different? But I think that's when it's so important to just find some little gem that resonates with you. And I always like to tell people, you know, I don't think it requires you to believe in something, even if it's belief in your own ability to heal or change. Sorry, my dog just yelled at the mail person. It doesn't require us to be...
By the way, what's your dog's name?
Oh, dog's name is Hava with a J.
Hava. Hava is agreeing with you. The power of belief is important.
100%. Hava likes this concept.
Go Hava.
A lot.
Maybe yeah. Hava needs a pet. Hava, come on in. No, I think it's interesting how our pets pick up on our sensory stuff, or there could be someone out there. So go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not necessary to get to that 100% certainty that something is going to help you, because we can never really have that. That comes in retrospect. But I like to tell people, like, if you can get to 80%, that closes the gap enough where you can make a leap of faith. And then you can start to, through the same process of conditioning, but a positive conditioning known as the science of small wins, you can actually celebrate yourself and congratulate yourself for taking each small step. And by doing that, you are actually retraining your brain. You're retraining that part of the nervous system that previously wanted to avoid moving forward. And you're actually strengthening what's known as the behavioral approach system, or that part of you that willingly and eagerly takes steps forward. So I don't think I quite hit on your question about the different pillars, but I'm happy to get into that next.
Well, the bottom line is we're multidimensional beings. So the language that you're talking about, for me as a Western trained MD who integrates Eastern thought and what I would call universal truths, I love the fact that we discussed hope and the power of belief. I was just re-looking at my own mission statement, which I'll send you. I just put on my Instagram of love of all kind. And having people seek out care and looking at myself as like a facilitator of well-being, but that each individual human being is their own healer, and that we have our own GPS system of what are kind of pillars of health and well-being. And then there's times in our life where we need a Ben Ahrens to come along in your program, or a Dr. Denise. And I always like to empower my patients that they made a choice for their own well-being. And I like to use words that keep things neutral and open. I like what you said about that 80%. I think if we have such strong conviction, we're not having our own introspection in the process, like being our own scientist. So not only having that power of belief, but then also looking at all the other possibilities. So you're open for all the ways you can change, and keeping that mind and body and soul really flexible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%.
Can you and I do a deep dive? It might be fun because of the people that come to you, and obviously I would never say any patient's name, but I have worked with people that have chronic, kind of the combination, they come to me, they might have anxiety, chronic fatigue, you know, in the Western diagnoses, dysthymia or major depression. But I, like you, like to be open to all of it. Holistic nutrition, exercise is mind medicine. And I, in my neck of the woods, I'm in Manhattan Beach, California. I've had people that I've helped that have chronic fatigue or Lyme disease. And so I have a team of nutritionists and people that I send them to. You know, some people have viruses that are incredibly rare that people don't know about. So I have, you know, an infectious disease specialist, Dr. Chia, in the area that's a consultant. So can you take us through what it would be like from if someone were to contact you and ReOrigin, like maybe some of the top kind of people that are like the perfect people? That, I mean, I think all of us can benefit from your program. And I know I work with all different patients, but maybe it'd be neat to do a deep dive example and then kind of like what that would look like for their path of well-being.
Yeah, great question. So some of the, you know, the complexity here is that these types of conditions, when it comes to chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme disease, long COVID, chemical sensitivities, these conditions that may have started with an initial trigger or during a certain time, but then continue to persist after that trigger is potentially gone or no longer the immediate cause of it, it can become very difficult to understand, to diagnose, and to treat because they are so multifaceted. So kind of linking it back to the various pillars and levels of our, you know, the human being, chronic fatigue, for instance, you know, there's a physiological component to it where the adrenals become depleted from overuse. There's a mental emotional component to it where we just feel heavy from having and burned out from having tried for so long. And there's a neurological component to it, right? Where the brain has been depleted of key metabolites and hormones and neurotransmitters that are needed for us to feel good. So there's all of these different things. And I think,
I just want to add something because I really wanted to have you on here because as a Western medicine doctor who's also a high-level empath and very intuitive, there's the seen energy, then the unseen energy. There's the linear Newtonian part of the universe, and there's the quantum part of the universe. And everyone's unique neurostyle is awake and aware to their exact perfect moment, right? And so besides what you just said with the adrenals, the neurologic, a lot of people are picking up on other people's tagging off their emotions. If you're on your social media a lot and you don't realize that words, thoughts, and actions carry their own vibrational frequency, hearing, you know, I have the discussion on mindful ingestion on my On Staying Sane series, which I know couples with this neuroplasticity, that there's different people, I'm sure, who you find are more aware to emotional sensitivities, that they have higher levels of what, like spidey senses, right? And so I like to integrate all of it, the science, the intuition, the empathy, and take a real scientific method, which I believe you are like, do you feel like you're like an investigator, healer when you're like meeting new people? Like, do you get excited to think about all the possibilities for someone accessing their unique wellness strategies?
Yeah, I think you know what, we kind of have to be, because these types of conditions are so individual in the way that they express. And to your point, I really feel that there's two sides of the coin. There's never just what's coming at us from the environment. That would be the, you know, as you mentioned, the Newtonian model is just looking at a cause and effect. Okay, you had this pathogen, you had a, you know, coronavirus, or you had a Lyme Borrelia infection, and then that creates this this issue in the body. And it's never so simple like that, because we know that one person can become very sick from something and symptomatic, and those symptoms can express in very unique ways, while someone else can experience or be exposed to the same triggers, but not have the same experience, not have the same symptomatic expression. And so there's always this kind of journey. There's always a little bit of an investigation into the person, into the human being, and not just the condition itself. In fact, a friend and sort of wise physician that I met years ago, you know, kind of wisely said, don't treat the condition, treat the person, and the condition will naturally fall away. And so I think when it comes to, you know, taking an approach like what I do with self-directed neuroplasticity, that's to say, teaching people how to kind of pop the hood on their own brain, their own nervous system, their own experience, and start to understand not only what their triggers are, what they've been exposed to in the past, and what might be triggering them in the present, but also start to really understand why their body may be responding in that way. And then when they shine the light of conscious awareness on what's been an otherwise obscured process, that's when they can begin to intervene. They can begin to shift it, and they can do it in a scientific and systematic way we call, systematic desensitization or deconditioning. And they can do it in this way that's not just like in the moment, working in the moment, like you would take, 10 deep breaths, you can calm yourself down in the moment, but doing it in a way where it's actually conditioning a new default response so that they no longer find themselves in that state of agitation or symptoms in the first place.
So I'm listening to all of your words really carefully, and I love honoring and bridging science. I feel like we're living in a time for humanity, I call it the pulse of consciousness, where we have so much access to data and new information that the human mind and sort of the extension of our souls is like a supercomputer. So for just a little bit of review, you and I spoke about how even the concept, you and I were at a museum, of neuroplasticity started to be known in the 1960s, right? And then we're very fortunate. I always like to honor, you said the power of belief. I think Joe Dispenza's body of work is amazing, and his ability to use his mind and heal a very severe spinal injury. Then also what you just spoke about of external things that can influence our wellness. There's Bruce Lipton, and he's, the pioneer on, epigenetics and the fact that we all have our material DNA, and then we can turn on or off our own unique thrive based on being aware of how our environment influences our own material DNA. And so what I love about your journey and your pathway is that you've traveled the world meeting the scientists and gathering the data. I always like to say data is my boyfriend. it's just fun, but also being open that there's always new stuff we're finding out, right? So it's like, it's neither this nor that. And that's why I like to pay attention to words and what we say to ourselves, our words, thoughts, and actions. I'm sure in your program, you're training people to realize how powerful what we tell ourselves is. And that's why the embrace your neurostyle is so positive, instead of maybe if you've had years of programming, like I'm just thinking back to you as young Ben being told you might not ever, when a doctor or anyone in the healthcare profession tells you news that sounds like it's so final and it's like game over, that shuts down a big part of your own healing process. And so one of the things when I wrote this spiritual mission statement back in 2015 was about realizing the power of our mind and the power of belief and neuroplasticity, and that we are our own best healers if we remember it. And so I think that awareness piece is key, in hope, awareness and hope, and then finding your own unique path.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's it really comes down to finding a way to be at ease with the world. And because we're unique, for one person, they might hear loud music and feel really excited and uplifted, and their brain might release dopamine and endorphins and serotonin and oxytocin and all these feel-good chemicals. And for another person right next to them, they might hear the exact same song, but it might be really agitating, right? And their brain and body would take on a completely different response and produce cortisol and adrenaline, norepinephrine, and basically send them into fight or flight just from hearing the same thing. So it's very important for, not to take a one-size-fits-all approach, but rather to guide people through a process where they can identify themselves in the environment and then navigate, give them the tools to kind of navigate within that.
Are you finding that a lot of the people that are seeking consultation right now, this is the response, we're coming out of the pandemic or learning how to live with the aftermath, the loss of maybe family members or people that are dealing with long COVID or people that are trying to figure out, how much do I really want to socialize now? I feel like a lot of people are, I've had teens in my practice that after doing Zoom school. Now they're hybrid, then they're in person. It was a bit of a shock to the nervous system. It's like coming out of a bunker. So I feel like we have pandemic overlay on top of any other thing. So like, that's a very important, I'm wondering like what you're seeing or what you're hearing or what people are expressing when they're coming to work with you.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, I think in order to have good health and to be thriving, we need a variety of different ingredients. We need social connection. We need, interaction. We need changes of environment, right? If we're sitting home all day in the same room or something, we know that this can feed back onto the nervous system. And I'm always very interested in how our environment or making, you know, physical changes feeds back into the nervous system and affects our mood, our psychology, and our physiology. And, you know, just to give you one example, a lot of times when people feel stuck, it's far easier in a sense to feel stuck if you are staying in the same close quarters for a long time, because your eyes, the information that your eyes are feeding to your brain are actually saying, yeah, I'm stuck in this same place. Where this is where the power of something as simple as going for a walk or turning your head in a different direction or looking at a horizon line and dropping into panoramic vision changes the information that comes into your brain, which affects your subconscious mind, which in turn allows your nervous system to relax, because deeply on a subconscious level, now your brain is saying, okay, actually I'm not stuck. I can see different things. I can see new horizons. The nervous system begins to calm down. So, yeah, you know, we're definitely seeing this. I was going to say a low level of agitation, but it certainly accumulates into a high level of agitation, where people have tended to, from what I'm seeing, are tending to settle on a slightly higher level of anxiety. Whereas we used to be able to drop back into, you know, deeper levels of relaxation. I think throughout the last 2 years and all of the news and everything going on in the world, and, you know, there's never been a perfect time, but certainly in the last 2 years, we've been consuming more fear-based information perhaps than most times prior. A lot of
people
are— By the
way, absolutely. I like to call it like the earth ride, and at times just to validate people, it feels like it's been our own time in history of like an Armageddon. And there's also been a lot more hatred that's been given permission, you know, like the era of the sociopath. I like to discuss that to grab people's attention, then take them to validate that crisis feeling, but then to walk people through how they can have their own unique thrive given like all the stuff we're hearing and feeling, and how do we interact in our environment, which it sounds like Reorigin, like this is what you're training people to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So it does seem to be the case that people are settling at a slightly elevated baseline, or their set point for anxiety has been elevated a bit, which of course can just catalyze other issues and potentiate, you know, the conditions for something like long COVID to occur. And so really what we're seeing when people come to Reorigin is, you know, first and foremost, we are sharing the information that I received that made me very hopeful. So really giving them a little bit of the insight and the science of how your brain totally changes, how you can do it through a series of simple exercises. We have science advisory board called the Brain Trust. So people, you know, understand and kind of get it in their nervous system that this is actually coming from a legitimate scientific background. And then we give them a series of exercises that they can practice to start to do that deconditioning, to learn how to strengthen their depth of recovery. And that's another thing, whereas in our current society, whenever people even think of the word exercise, we think of exertion, right? We rarely think of our ability to exercise our recovery mechanisms. So that's really precisely what we do, is we give them a series of tools to essentially exercise their parasympathetic response and their ability to get into deeper states of recovery, relaxation. And then probably the most important aspect is the specific desensitization. So this is where, you know, we might have people with chemical sensitivities or food sensitivities that can identify specific triggers. And there are ways using neuroplasticity to gradually expose themselves to, you know, slightly more doses of the thing that would previously have agitated them or led to inflammation and symptoms. And now they find that they can start to do it, you know, gradually and with this methodology, in a way that they can slowly begin to step back into the world and enjoy all of those things that had previously gone missing. And here's where, you know, the Zen proverb always comes to mind. It's not about padding the earth, but putting shoes on your feet. Then you're free to go anywhere. And that's really the whole idea.
I love it. What do you, on your journey throughout the world, was there one share you'd like to give us? I know there's so many of something that was like your biggest myth buster. Was there a moment when you had, I'm sure there's so many moments because I know you get really excited, I think, about education and learning too. But do you have a story about something on your own healing path that was another, just like you had hope with that book when you were on unlocking your own personal well-being?
Yeah, you know, I had a really profound experience the year after I started really making headway in my own recovery, learning to apply some of this neuroplasticity and change my body's responses. And I started to curiously look at what else I could change. And I remember this particular experience I had where I was working in a busy office in Times Square. And so for someone with, you know, heightened sensitivities and to light and sound, it was a very challenging environment to be in. And I had a outsized stress or threat response whenever the phone in my office would ring. So for the first 6 months there or so, I realized I had this uncontrollable reaction to the ringing phone. It was almost like an allergy where the phone would ring and my heart would race and my palms would start sweating. And it was almost like a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And so I started to experiment a little bit with this and take this as what, you know, had been sort of this obstacle, this ringing phone, as this opportunity to practice this new response and to apply these techniques in a real world setting. And so basically what I did was I, you know, made a new rule for myself where every time the phone rang, instead of just picking it up in that agitated way and anticipating a negative, you know, customer service issue I wouldn't be able to solve or a negative conversation or whatever it might be, instead of doing that same old routine, I implemented a new routine, which was to hear the ringing phone and then push myself back from my desk, take a deep breath, pause for a few seconds, smile on my face, and then to pick up the phone in this relaxed manner. And I did that over and over and over again. So I got to practice this dozens of times a day, you know, and I'm sure there's sometimes the phone rang and I forgot and the old response took prevalence. But the more I practiced this, the more I started to notice that my default response was shifting until about 10 days in. I noticed one occasion where the phone rang and all of a sudden my shoulders dropped, a smile came to my face, my breath deepened, and I just felt this incredible relaxation response triggered now by the ringing phone. So that was a huge kind of aha moment where I realized, wow, like not only can you, through conscious intervention and conscious conditioning, not only can you desensitize yourself or decondition yourself to the things that previously caused a very visceral bodily response. Obviously, this was not a conscious thing that was happening. But you can actually choose and condition in a new response, the one that you want to have, the one that's going to help you and make you more effective in whatever it is you want to do.
I have so much to say about that, but I love that example because it's so concrete and such a win. And it's a combination of like cognitive behavioral reframing. And then I'm thinking of even pairing a sensory awareness, just like the Pavlov's experience. I have two things that I want to share. Number one, my own son, who's 13, he's always had heightened sensory awareness, right? And so one thing that he's let me know, I think the other thing too, everyone, when you're aware of your own neurostyle, you can verbally tell someone in your friend group, okay, this is what's going on. So my son likes it to be quiet in the car when I pick him up from the bus because he already had a huge sensory overload day. And so he knows that to get his mind to kind of go from one time part of your day to another, he needs that silence. So I think knowing your own neurostyle and your resiliency and the tools that you've just spoken about, you can communicate and help others to understand you. Then I wanted to tell you that I tag, so I'm not going to go into all of this because I just did another show, and swimming for me is everything because I use it to heal. I use it to process. I tag the pool with not only mind medicine, but entrepreneurship, healing prayers. I devote laps to things. So I create moving meditations that are like think tanks where you say a word, thought, or phrase, and then you just swim and then you let things just drop into your awareness. So once you start accessing your own unique kind of neuroplasticity, I mean, do you have some examples of that? Like, it's like watch and be amazed once you like are rewiring your own brain.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest shift that comes about when you start to do this type of work is that the world becomes a playground. Everything becomes
Everything
becomes an opportunity for adapting and changing. And so, you know, the goal subtly starts to change from getting to a certain destination, because we start to realize that in an ever evolving brain and body, if change is our nature, then the whole notion of arriving at a certain point, like I'm going to arrive at the point of perfect health and keep and just be there, you know, it's not quite like that. And in fact, that wouldn't even be too exciting. Everything is this fluid evolutionary process. And so, yeah, just to give another example for me, you know, after that thing with the ringing phone, another thing was walking.
Wait. Can I just say something about the ringing phone? Mm. I like to talk about, you know, when we go into our suffering with an awareness of our own unique neurostyle. So you, in that moment of time with the phone, you identified the sensory kind of annoyance, and then you made the decision, the mindful awareness in the moment of now, of what you wanted to do to pair it. So you were sort of mastering your own unique sensory experience. So you went into what was, I'll just use the word alleged suffering, but it sure felt like suffering. And then you reprogram. So you in that moment, and great example, I know you're about to give another example, you know, that series of crisis, stabilization, and thrive. So at that crisis annoying moment, you went into that suffering and you reprogrammed and retrained the situation to now get to stability. And then, you know, pairing it to your own thrive or just staying at that stability. It just depends on the sensory experience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing and exciting thing is that there's no limit to how and where we can practice these kinds of exercises. And each time we do overcome, you know, another what seemed to be barrier, it gives us that incredible feeling of freedom, that now we're free to go where we previously wouldn't have gone before because the level of agitation in the nervous system was just too uncomfortable.
I'm smiling. So can you tell us your other example?
Oh, yeah. So there was a lot. So another one
No, there's not. You have no examples.
No examples.
No, we'll do other shows. So keep going. I want to hear Times Square. Well, we got through Times Square, everyone.
Yeah, Times Square. The walking through Times Square became a almost like a kung fu practice every morning, right? Where instead of...
I know I'm interrupting myself to let you know me, my neurostyle. I'm like picturing you and I creating like a really funny meme. So I'm like, dun, 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 in Times Square.
There you go.
And I see us in like these like karate martial arts and you and I are smiling and then our heads are moving. And like, we got this. Okay, so go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's easy to feel that stickiness, that stuckness in a place that's just crowded almost by definition. You know, you're out of step with people. You have those awkward moments where you're trying to bypass each other and you both go in the same direction and things like that. But whenever I would remember to, I would try and take this more kung fu approach, which is just to get in the flow and try and maintain this inner sense of stillness within this moving crowd. And whenever I was able to do that, which happened more and more frequently, it almost, this crowd that I once saw as this like particleized stagnant mass, all of a sudden became like this flowing river that I was a part of, right? And I could flow in and out and weave in and out and just seamlessly kind of, you know, dance around people and everything. And it just, it was an incredible, like a flow experience.
So that
was one. Yeah. And then as a result of that, I actually became interested with this idea of maintaining stillness in otherwise, you know, chaos. And I went to motorcycle racing school, which is something I'd wanted to do for a long time. And I went there specifically with the purpose of wanting to train my nervous system to be able to remain still while whizzing around the track at 200 miles an hour. And they have a saying that when it comes to these guys who do this professionally, you know, race these MotoGP bikes and actually go 200 miles per hour, they say the fastest guys have the slowest hands, implying that, you know, their bike, they're whizzing around the track at incredible speeds, but inside their helmet and inside themselves, everything is perfectly still. They're completely calm. And in fact, in this day and age, you know, they set them up with biometrics and they track their heart rate variability and their heart rate and all this kind of stuff while they're racing. And they do find consistently that the ones who are really the best at this sport, it's almost like they're sitting in a lawn chair, you know?
Oh my God, I love it.
Their heart rate. Yeah.
How did you find out about this?
Just something I was interested in, you know, previously I grew up riding a motorcycle and after, you know, getting back, just saw this as an opportunity to practice more, ability to stay calm in chaos and, did a bunch of other stuff from there, from survival school to long distance duration, open ocean paddle from Montauk to Block Island and a lot of different other, you know, stuff. But, yeah, I think I kind of hit that point where once I recovered my own health using the brain's ability to adapt and the body's ability to change, and it worked not so quickly, but it ultimately worked so well. I remember taking this pause and saying, wow, now let's see how far I can take this. And then just applied it, you know,
like yeah, one no by rules, one to doing all no these, limits.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Just to doing all these other things that I previously, you know, held back from doing, because again, the agitation in the system would just get too high. So I couldn't take those steps forward, but it's now I had the tools, I had the techniques, like now I can take those steps into it. And I think that's one of the most profound things. And one of the things that I enjoy most when I see other people on their healing journey, they start to make those changes. You know, they came in with some doubts, not knowing if this would work for them. And then they start to break through that belief barrier, like Roger Bannister, you know, breaking the 4-minute mile, and they start to realize, oh, wow, you know, this is actually possible for me. I'm doing this. What else is possible for me? And they keep moving forward with it. And they start to get that sense of momentum. And in fact, in ReOrigin, we call our coaching groups momentum sessions for that reason, that it's really all about, you know, aimed about, keeping people moving forward together and creating that sense of kind of unshakable progress.
I love it. I love it. I'm hearing your words. I'm feeling it. I'm seeing it. And I'm really grateful and excited that you've not only shared your healing journey with us today, but that you have mastered this in such a way with humility and excitement and deep play as well, that you have founded such an amazing, you know, the ReOrigin. So I'm wondering if you can just tell everyone a little bit about where we can find you and how they can seek your guidance. And it was just lovely to have you today.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Denise. It's been great to be here and I've enjoyed this conversation. And for anyone who, you know, can relate to what we've been talking about or resonates with this information, you can go to reorigin.com. That's spelled out re-origin.com. And there you'll find, we have a core program that consists of 6 video sessions. Each one has smaller bite-sized videos that takes about just a week to get through. And that teaches you the fundamentals of what I like to call doing neuroplasticity. So the active component of changing your own brain. And then they have the option to engage with the community, to add this group coaching, what we call these momentum sessions. And again, we found that, you know, people who join these types of sessions and stay motivated and stay looking ahead really tend to have incredible results. And it's been an exciting time. And I look forward to you know, hopping on a call with anyone who's interested. On the site, there is a place where you can book a call that goes directly to my calendar. And we can be happy to chat about whatever it is you're going through and how we might be able to help.
Wow. Well, thank you. And also, can people find you personally on LinkedIn, or is the ReOrigin site the best way to reach you?
Yeah, probably through ReOrigin is the best way. I'm just starting to get more active on the socials, but I haven't done it myself yet. So the ReOrigin website is a good jump off point. And from there, you can find our Instagram and everything else.
Thank you so much, Ben. And I want to set up another call with you. I'm really inspired. And thanks, everyone. And remember, you know, we have the power. We're very powerful beings. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.